Welcome to another episode in the podcast called Labor Matters, where I address trending issues and queries relating to employment law, specifically in the context of Barbadian labor law. I'm Michelle Russell, attorney at law, and I have a passion for employment law and labor matters. I'm also a self-described budding social activist. I write a weekly column for The Nation newspaper in the Sunday Sun, where I discuss various issues relating to employment and employment rights. So don't forget to get your copy of The Sunday Sun if you want to learn more of your employment rights.
You can contact your Nation Publishing subscription team 7 days a week in 7 different ways. Call customer service any day at 430-5550. Call subscriptions at 430-5503 or 04. Email subscribers at nationnews.com. Email e-paper support at nationnews.com. Visit www.nationnews.com and select print subscriptions. Visit www.nationnews.com and select e-paper subscriptions. Visit our office on Fontebelle St. Michael. If your call is not answered, please leave a message. We are here to serve you. Nation News, your news, your time, your way.
Now, as you can probably tell, today we're doing things slightly different. And we're not just doing an audio recording, but we are doing a video recording because this is the election edition of Labor Matters. And you're probably wondering, what does election have to do with labor law? And how would we have an election edition? It's simple. Labor represents the way we are all able to have a livelihood. So your employment determines how you live, and how well you are employed determines how well you live. So that when you examine an administration in the context of how it dealt with labor matters, you're also examining the administration in the context of how the livelihood of the populace was affected during their time of being in power. So today, that's what we're going to look at. We're going to look at labor in review and look at how the current administration has performed in the context of labor. Now, what is important is that, you know, it's being called silly season. And if you look at some of what's happening on the campaign trail, I can perhaps see why it's being dubbed that. And I would hope that we would have a campaign that deals more with the issues rather than focusing on attacking candidates, because I don't believe that helps us as an electorate to decide who we want to vote for. We want to know what you're going to do when you're in power, where you're going to go with this, and how is it going to affect me as an employee? How is it going to affect me as an employer in my business? We want engagement on the issues. Then we have this whole question of, should COVID positive people be allowed to vote? And a lot of people are saying, well, it's too much trouble if you do it. But a lot of others are saying we should let them vote. But I think the thing we forget is that COVID doesn't discriminate. COVID doesn't care if you're a BLP, DLP, or APP supporter. The reality is, we might be thinking that by not letting COVID positive people or their contacts vote, that we'll be keeping out the electorate that votes for the opposition. But COVID doesn't discriminate. It might keep out diehard BLP supporters. It might keep out diehard DLP. So everybody is affected by this exclusion. And so that the question is, should we really allow this to go that way, or should the EBC have come up with a better solution? Should the government have amended the directives to allow for the voting? And then there's this whole issue of voting in an opposition. Some are for it, and some are saying we need an opposition in parliament, and others are saying, no, be careful not to vote in an opposition and give this vexed vote and end up with an administration you did not want. But a lot of political scientists say it's the undecided that sway an election. Party supporters tend to vote, they're party loyal. So regardless, they will always vote for their party. So that what tends to sway the election is those in the middle who are undecided. And I'm kind of hoping that after we do labor in review today, it will help you, or help the undecided, to decide where they will cast their vote, or if they decide to vote at all. Because I do understand there's a part of the populace that never votes, or just plan to abstain from this election. So I think it's an exciting period. It's going to be a very, very interesting election. because right now the administration has the majority of seats. You almost can't get better than 29-1. And it's curious to see what is going to happen on election day. So what we're going to do today, in looking at Labour in Review, we're going to look at the Labour initiatives that were done by this administration. And we're going to see if we give them a passing grade, if we think that they should be allowed to continue, if we think there need to be improvements. So we're going to look at the Bird Program, the Boss Program, the Best Program. Notice they're all with B's. I don't know if that was an accident. We're going to look at the minimum wage. We're going to look at the severance payment, sunset legislation. And we're literally going to say, well, did they do well here? And if they did well, was it more for the employer or for the worker? So let us get into it. All right, so let us start with the major initiatives that happened under this administration. And let me be clear, I won't be able to touch everything, not within the time frame I have. So yes, there'll be stuff that you can say I have left out. I could only deal with the major ones for the purpose of this podcast / video recording. So under this administration, the very first thing they did in labor was the BRRRT retrenchment. Now remember, under the IMF program, they had to make some cuts, and part of this ended up trimming the public service. So the very first thing that happened under Labour that was a major Labour initiative was the BRRRT retrenchments. We then had the BOSS program for the public sector workers. We had the BEST program for the hotels. We had the sunset legislation, which came out last year. We had the national minimum wage, which came into effect, sunset legislation was 2020. We had the national minimum wage, which came out in April 2021. Then, of course, there's the issue of vaccine mandates. We're going to touch on that. We had the LEAD workers asking for help. Then we had the time when the G4S workers asked for help and our government got involved. We had the hotel workers. There were tons and tons of strikes, primarily in 2020, that carried over into 2021. We have the strikes of the nurses. We have the added technology that was given to NIS to allow unemployment benefits to be applied for online and direct deposits to be made in respect of pensions and unemployment benefits. And then we had this whole issue of meetings with the social partnership. So that's 11. That's 11 major initiatives that we're going to look at today that are more perhaps in the positive light in respect of the things that the administration did. So let's look at the first one, the BRRRT retrenchments. Now, thousands of workers in the public sector were laid off. Initially, it was about 1,500 that should have been laid off, all right? I'm not very set on the numbers, but I do know up to February 2019, there were about 1,100 public servants that were laid off. Was this a good thing? Now, we know the layoffs were necessary to meet with the IMF targets. And I think the one thing we have to be able to say about this administration, regardless of party loyalty, so far, this administration has proven beneficial to the economy. We know what the previous decade did, the downgrade of the dollar, the extent of debt, etc. And we have to give the administration props where they deserve it. Somebody told me I'm too neutral because I said the good and the bad, but I try to be as balanced as possible. They've really been beneficial for the economy. And the BRRRT program was beneficial for the economy, even if it was not beneficial for the actual workers themselves. But how did this layoff affect the public service? There was a complaint back in 2018 from the NUPW and some of the unions that service delivery was affected. Because, you know, had less employees with the same amount of workload, so that for the ones that were laid off, they tried to spread out their workload among the ones that remained. So the ones that remained were overburdened with work. Service delivery was slowed down. I can personally say for most of the registries in Barbados, we did have that problem where it took longer to get things out of the registry because that's what the major layoffs did. So on the one hand, BRRRT was good for the economy, but it was not good for service delivery. But the argument has been made that regardless of which administration comes into power, there are always layoffs immediately, especially for boards, so that they choose people who are party loyal. So some people say, regardless of BRRRT, there would have been layoffs. Regardless of which government it would have been, there would have been layoffs. The real question though, what has happened to these people since they've been laid off? How many of those who are laid off from the public service are now gainfully employed? Now, there was an article appearing in the media in July 2019, where Corey Lane, who is a special advisor to the Prime Minister on poverty alleviation, he had said that 550 of the retrenched workers had received help under the Household Mitigation Unit and from corporate Barbados and from the churches. He also said that most of the retrenched workers were women and 62% of them were breadwinners. Now, this becomes important because as we come forward to 2020 and we look at the unemployment rate that went up, that study also showed the majority of people who were laid off in 2020 were also women. So that the question is, how has this administration's labor policies affected female workers? So far we look at birth as a success for the economy, not so good for the public servants who are left off, laid off, and not so good for the delivery of the service industry in respect of those public sector offices where a lot of the layoffs took place. So that's birth. What about boss? Remember boss? Boss went through a lot of controversy because they had several names for it, meet in turn and all sorts of things before they landed on boss, which is, what was it, the Barbados Optimal Savings Scheme? Only for public workers, later extended so that members of the public could subscribe by either buying the bonds directly from bondholders or buying it from the central bank, etc. Now, boss is supposed to be a four-year bond with interest at a rate of 5% per annum, which is paid biannually. The bondholders could cash it in after 24 months, and the aim of this was to reduce the salary of the public workers between what would have been about 7% to 17%, depending on your pay grade, to allow the government to have some fiscal space because of the pandemic and the need for to create greater fiscal space to work on capital works projects. That's what boss was. It was a salary cut for our public sector workers. So the public sector workers were affected in the beginning when the administration took over because the BIRD program resulted in retrenchments. And then we see the public servants being affected again in 2020 under the BOSS program by the cutting salary anywhere between 7% and 17%, where the portion that was cut is converted to bonds. However, the BOSS program was touted as being good for maintaining employment. So unlike under BIRD, where they had to lay off people, under BOSS, they managed to maintain the public sector complement, but cutting the salaries and giving them a financial benefit, which will mature 4 years down the line. Now, criticisms have been leveled because they say under the new debt settlement arrears bill, where the government now, based on that legislation, can pay its debts in bonds, the concern has been expressed that they might try to pay the debt to these public servants in further bonds. But the government has said they will not do so. So I guess we're going to check down the line to see if they've kept their word. But the good thing about boss, nobody lost their jobs. The good thing about boss, you get interest down the line. So it's a way of savings. So on a positive level, and you got to opt out. You get to opt out. So on any month that you want all your salary, you get it back. So if we had to give it a passing grade, we would say it was not terrible for the workers because they allowed them to choose whether to opt out or not. And those who were paid under $3,000 a month were not even enrolled in the program unless they requested to do so. So let's jump forward to BEST. Now, BEST was the program that was put in to try to save the jobs of the hotel workers. Now, remember in 2020, pandemic came. We had our first lockdown. Our first case was the 17th of March. By the end of March, we went into lockdown. Hotels closed. There was a lot of pandemonium work-wise. People weren't properly laid off. Some weren't placed on short time. Many didn't know what to do. Hotels didn't have occupancy. There were mass layoffs. Now, under the Severance Payments Act, normally if you lay off workers, you have to stop at the 13-week mark. After that, you have to hire them back or you have to sever them, which means paying them severance for all the years they work. A lot of the hotels were worried. Having not had occupancy for months, they couldn't rehire the people. There wasn't any cash flow. Government jumped in and said, look, this is the BEST program. It granted $300 million to hotels who joined the program to allow them to retain the staff. The aim is that they were to re-engage their hotel staff and pay them at 80% of their 2019 salaries, or 80% of the salary they had in December 2019, and they were to allow the staff to undergo training under the NTI during that period. There was also a portion of money that was allotted towards making the hotels more green, renovating towards green technology. That's what BEST was for. Now, initially, there was a must, many hotels did not prescribe to the program. So this was something that was to benefit employers. The last two we looked at were, because BEST was for employers, and it wasn't well prescribed, subscribed at first. But the government then made a few amendments to the program in consultation with the BTA, BHTA, and it became better prescribed, so that based on what was said by the BHTA in February 2021, that about 40 of the 55 hotels who had applied had been approved, but more were looking to participate. So it would appear that in that respect, if you had 40 out of 55 hotels at the very least that subscribed to the program, we had about 40 hotels that were able to rehire staff. And in that respect, it would seem like the BEST program was a success. We have at least one hotel executive, Peter DeFrazers of Ocean 2 Hotel and Spa, who went on record and lauded the program as having saved several hotels. So again, another initiative under the current administration that appears to have been successful, because it allowed employers to save their businesses, at least in the hotel industry, and it allowed jobs. So it allowed many of the laid off workers to get back to work. The reality is, some people complained about it, saying 80% salaries to do the same work is not fair, and I agree. And we would hope that the employers would have made some compromise and at least tweak the job description so that you don't feel like you're being underpaid for the amount of work. But the reality is, getting 80% of your salary is better than getting the 60% that you get on unemployment. And unemployment only lasts for 6 months, whereas the jobs hopefully would have been indefinite for a year or more. All right. So it would appear the BEST program was successful. So now we turn to the sunset legislation. You didn't realize how, like, it wasn't until I was compiling this that I realized just how much the government did in terms of labor initiatives. Because let me tell you what can happen. Our brains are such that we are wired to forget the things that happen further down, and we would sooner remember the things that are more current. So for instance, one of the things we're thinking of now is mandates. We're thinking of the strikes of the nurses, and it might cause us to forget early initiatives or the other things the government did that were beneficial. And that's why I wanted to do this, so that we look at the good, the bad, the ugly, the way they were champions for the people, and the way we thought that they dropped the ball, so that we can have a more balanced view on whether or not they really succeeded under the labor initiatives. So the sunset legislation was something that was introduced in March 2020, again for the hotels. So this is another initiative that was for the employers. So we had BEST for the employers, we had sunset legislation for the employers. And essentially, it was an amendment to the Severance Payments Act, which lengthened the period for which an employee could qualify for severance. So normally, if an employee is placed on layoff or short time for 13 weeks, at the end of the 13 weeks, the employer has to decide whether to re-employ him or whether to sever him and pay him severance in accordance with the Severance Payments Act. March happened. When the 13 weeks were coming to an end, the hoteliers complained and said, we don't have money to pay severance. Some of these employees employed for 10 years and more, we can't afford it. And the government stepped in and said, we're going to extend the period. So it moved from 13 weeks to 22 weeks. Or I think it was 19 weeks within a period of 26 weeks. So what it did, it gave the hotels, again, fiscal space, so that because they weren't having occupancy, they didn't have to worry about having to rehire the employees and not be able to pay them, and also not being able to pay them severance payments. So this was clearly something that was more beneficial to the employers and the employees, because it also meant employees had to stay unemployed for longer. The government did extend the period for which employees could get unemployment benefits. Because remember, unemployment benefits normally cut off at 6 months. But in this case, they made sure it fell within the same 6 months period, so that even though the employee was on a longer period of layoff, that they would nonetheless still get unemployment benefits. So I think we could kind of give it a passing grade. It wasn't the best thing for the employees, but because they were allowed to get unemployment benefits, it wasn't necessarily a terrible thing, and it certainly gave employers fiscal space. Because one of the things we have to remember, if businesses shut down, we have less jobs. Less jobs mean higher unemployment. So though sometimes it might be a bitter pill to swallow, and it might be something that's not necessarily favorable to the employees. I am always for initiatives that save jobs in the end, because it is easier to save an existing job than to create a new one. All right. So 2 points for the employers here. We have best program that was successful for them. Sunset legislation in the amendment of the Severance Payment Act. Again, successful for them. What was the next initiative? We had the national minimum wage. Now, this had been on the books for decades. Successive governments had never introduced a national minimum wage in Barbados. In 2020, our prime minister said we're going to get a national minimum wage, and it's going to start in April, take effect from April 2021. The business community cried out. They said, no, now is not the time. We're in a pandemic. We can't afford it. Even if you send it up by $2, it's going to add up. The wages bill is going to add up. And the prime minister held her ground. And despite great opposition from the business community, in April 2021, the National and Sectoral Minimum Wage Order was enacted, which created a national minimum wage of $8.50 per hour, or $68 for an 8-hour day, or $340 for a 40-hour work week. It also gave a minimum wage to security guards of $9.25 and created a minimum wage for overtime of $12.75 per hour, or $17 per hour on public holidays. So we have to give our props. This was definitely beneficial to employees. When you set a national minimum wage, it means employers by law cannot pay less. And in some industries, I sometimes tremble at the amount I hear employees go home with. I say to myself, how is this conscionable to give an employee this kind of money for an 8-hour day? It's different if you're paying per hour, then you can negotiate that. So this was a good initiative for them. And the fact that they stuck to their guns despite the fact that it was a pandemic and the pressure from the private sector and the business community. So this was good for the employees, and we have to applaud them for that. Then we had the LEAD workers. Now the LEAD workers are in a very unfortunate situation where their contracts of employment are with the Antigua and Barbuda government. And their NIS contributions from their salaries are also with the Antigua and Barbuda government. But Antigua and Barbuda has made them an offer of severance that most of them are not willing to accept, because it's only paying them about 50% of their severance, and the rest is supposed to be in land and other things that the reality is those who live in Barbados will not get any real benefit from. So they've been unemployed from the start of the pandemic, and literally they've hit hard times. I wrote two articles about it and helped to raise funds for them, because it's honestly sad. And our government stepped in and said, look, we understand we have no legal or contractual obligation to these LEAD workers because they weren't employed in Barbados. They were not employed under contracts of employment with Barbados. And they gave every LEAD worker who contributed to NIS in Antigua, they gave them a one-off payment of $2,000. Sorry, they gave all of them a one-off payment of $2,000. And those who contributed to NIS in Antigua and Barbados, they gave them $2,000 per month from the NIS for a year, as an advance on the severance they would get. And in my mind, this was the best balance you could have gotten in the circumstances. Some say the money should have been free, but the reality is we already know that NIS is strained from all the unemployment claims that we had in 2020. It's strained from the pension. It's strained. They had to top it up in January of 2021. And the fact that the government was willing to make an advance to employees that they have no contractual obligation to, in my mind, that was a very good thing. So, again, another point for the employees. So, we had best and sunset legislation for the employers, and we have minimum wage and the help to the LEAD workers that went to employees. Then, we had that whole bunch of strikes that were happening in 2020, but let's focus on the G4S. The G4S workers, the security guards, were complaining about a lack of equality in pay. They called them, I think, one set were called security officers and another set called security guards, and they used that difference in title to justify a difference in pay. Our prime minister came in as a champion, and you know how their campaign had said, Mia cares, and she came in, and she participated, along with the Minister of Labor, in negotiations with the employers at G4S, with the owners and management of G4S, And she said she was not, her government would not employ any business that treated workers like this. And in tutus, G4S agreed to make sure all the salary among the security guards was equal. And in that respect, she was the champion again of the employees. So that's what, number three, that's three for employees. We have Leah workers, we have minimum wage, and we have how she helped the G4S workers. We also had the situation where when a lot of the hotel workers were striking in 2020, because they were laid off with no severance, with no notice pay, and some with no holiday pay. Remember the Chaps employees? Remember the Cliff workers? Remember Barbados Beach Club? We had Accra. We had a bunch of them. And near the end of 2020, in November 2020, she met with the chairman of NIS, Leslie Haynes QC, and they came to an agreement where they got NIS to agree to pay these workers their severance by Christmas. And it actually occurred. So again, we see our prime minister, champion of the employees in this instance. Then we have the mandates. Now, that's the freshest one, and one that a lot of people are worried about going forward. The question is whether this government this year is going to introduce mandates, because she has staved it off for the whole of 2021. The business community, BAMP, BNA, and the hotel sector have been begging for mandates. And our prime minister held her ground and said she would not be introducing any vaccine mandates. She focused on public education on the vaccines, but she preserved the right of the individual to choose. And I personally have to give her props for that, because it was tremendous pressure to do otherwise, and she held her ground. Even Ralph Gonsalves, he was quoted in the media as telling our prime minister that mandates are the way to go, and she did not go that way. Whether she'll go that way this year, we don't know, and it's to be seen. But it was again in favor of employees by not introducing the mandates. Then we also had several meetings where the prime minister met with the stakeholders, meetings of the social partnership, which I am told had been suspended during the previous administration. There had been years that the previous administration did not meet with the social partnership and did not meet with the unions. And one thing we can say is that our prime minister has done this. Minister of Labor has done this. We've seen the chief labor officer. So in these respects, right, we can definitely say the administration has been the champion of labor in these good initiatives that helped employers, it helped employees, and at least one that helped the economy. So let's do a tally. Let's try a little tally here. So we said the BIRD initiative mostly benefited the economy. So we're going to call that neutral and we don't give it any points. But we have the BOSS program, again, that benefited more the government than anybody else, but at least it saved the jobs of the workers. So we're going to give it a 0.5. We have BEST that benefited the employers. So did the sunset legislation, and so did the meetings with the social partnership. So that's 3 points right there for employers. And then we have the minimum wage, NIS technology advances that allowed you to now apply for unemployment online and get paid by direct deposit for pension and unemployment. We had the help to Liat, the help to G4S, the help to hotel workers, and the refusal to introduce mandates that benefited employees. So that's 6.5 points in favor of employees, 3 points in favor of employers, and 1 point that I call neutral. So far, the administration seems to have done a lot more for employees than for employers, and they're winning where that's concerned. But I'm not going to sit here and pretend that all the administration has done is good things in labor. I believe we talk about both. And I keep saying, you need to understand that more than one thing can be true at the same time. You can love somebody and disagree with them. The same way you can love your spouse, your partner, and your pitney and still disagree with them. Because love and loyalty doesn't mean always agreeing. It means disagreeing respectfully and still loving the core of who the person is. So we're going to look at the negatives of the administration as well. What were the negatives? No, I have time constraints now. So you're going to find I spend a little less time on the negatives. But it's not because I'm biased. It's because I'm running out of time. The negative labor practices and initiatives under this administration, I have 10. Bear in mind I had 11 for the positives. But now we're looking at 10 negatives. Remember when BIRD just came out and the pensioners were told they would have to be paid in bonds? A lot of them were in the media talking about how they were waiting to get their money. they were looking forward to pay during retirement. Some were saying it was to do renovations on the home, fix the home, etc. And they were told that they have to wait a few more years, and they were only issued bonds instead of pay. That was not a good thing. You cannot trouble people's livelihoods. Without money, people can't live. They just cannot live. NIS, as much as I laud them for the technological advancements where you could now make applications online for unemployment benefits, late payments plagued 2020 and parts of 2021. I wrote in one of my articles of an employee who was waiting for 9 months, 9 months for a check from NIS. How can you be unemployed for 9 months and get not one unemployment benefit? There was another one who said in a period of 6 months, she got 2 checks and it didn't cover the whole 6 month period. So if nothing else we know, if NIS is supposed to be our lifeline, which is their slogan, if you're not paying people on time or close to on time, you're not a lifeline. They will be drowning by the time you go to help them. They're so far out to sea and so far out in debt that the payments don't go too far. This is not good. If you're going to update the technology, you also have to update, make the payments more timely, because payments is livelihood. People need to get the money and get the money on time. We also have the issue of the late payment of several public workers, members of tribunals, and then the complaints of those who did the ash cleanup. Now, the reality is late payments in the public sector has been around for a very long time. It did not originate with this administration, but they did not fix it either. And that's not good enough. Because if nothing else, this cabinet has been accused of is being top heavy. And I ask, do any of those cabinet members get late salaries? Because I know tons and tons of lower level workers in the public sector who are constantly plagued with late salaries. And that is unconscionable. That is unfair. If you can fix it for those at the top, you can fix it for everyone else. Then we have delay in payment of severance. So we have those who were laid off during that specific period between March and June in 2020. And some of them still haven't gotten their severance. There was another amendment to the severance payment legislation that was supposed to make the procedure for these people to collect severance much easier. The legislation, in my mind, was lacking because it still didn't make the procedure clear whether or not they had to go before a tribunal or not. And a lot of them ended 2020 with no severance payment and went through a good part of 2021 with no severance payment. That is not good enough. Then, in my view, it appeared there was more strike action under this administration than the previous one. Now, I don't know that it's a reflection on the administration as much as it's a reflection on the times, where Barbadians are no longer sitting back and willing to take anything, but they will stand up for their rights whether or not their unions join with them, because a lot of the strikes in 2020 and early 2021, they did without the unions. They were willing to stand up for themselves, and I stand with those, and I stand with the right to strike. But it is notable there was more strike action, but there was the double standard. I keep mentioning in 2017, when the unions organized a national strike in Barbados, our prime minister, as the then leader of the opposition, marched with the unions. I was in that march, and I'm not a member of a union, but I supported the strike and what was the point of the strike. And we were all there, and the Prime Minister was fine striking against the last administration. But when the strike started in 2020, she condemned those who were striking and said, this is not who we are. It cannot be okay to strike under one administration and not to strike under another. And that's a double standard we've seen repeated with the nurses. So we have the nurses who are striking over the safe zones, over inconsistent pay, and they're being condemned. And on top of that, our Prime Minister refuses to meet with them while complaining they didn't engage in proper industrial relations practice. But as I said in my last two podcasts, the improper industrial relations practice started with them. They messed up. And rather than bringing the strike to an end by just meeting with them, here we are 6 weeks later into elections, and these 100 nurses are probably not going to vote for the current BLP. The other thing is these mandates. So while I praise the Prime Minister and champion her for having not introduced mandates, our government has turned a blind eye to the employers who have nonetheless introduced the mandates and the testing mandates in defiance of what our government said, that you can't force a worker to be employed, to be vaccinated. So it's on the one hand, they're saying you can't force them, but when the employers are doing it, and they've been doing it publicly, including locking out workers who turn up unvaccinated or firing them, and our government has in large part been silent. The Minister of Labour said something and the Chief Labour Officer has gotten involved, but our government has said nothing. Nothing. So are you really against mandates if you're not still speaking out? Because when the Trojan rhythm came and they thought that the lyrics were bad, and I thought the lyrics were ill-advised, but let's be real, bad man tune all, bad man tune them out from me a little pitney. And you don't want to know how old I am right now. So bad man tune, not new. But all the government ministers spoke out against the Trojan rhythm, all of them. But when employers are introducing mandates, I hear crickets. It's silence. They're not speaking out. So the cancer is not that they didn't want to get involved. And who is singing the BLP jingle right now? Eh? Who's singing it? Except one of those that was on the Trojan rhythm. And these are the double standards that people see, you know, because Arthur Holder said something very important recently. He said, people and politicians need to realize that the electorate is more discerning than they give them credit for. Then, of course, we had the issue of the botched appointment of the deputy commissioner, which they denied for months. Senator Franklin brought it to the fore. Verla de Pisa spoke on it, and the government fought it until they had to just amend the legislation to fix the botched appointment. So we have 10 great initiatives, but we also have the negatives. So while there may be 6.5 points, because they benefited the workers in a number of ways, there are also a number of initiatives that really were beneficial to the labor force. And I count that as around 8. But at the end of the day, that's still close. 6.5 positive, 8 that not too close. The rest I call neutral. So, do they get a passing grade? I personally think they do. Because we don't need our government to be perfect. But we need them to be consistent. We need integrity. We need transparency, which is what they say they have. And we need them to not show the certain double standards. So, it is up to you to decide if based on this assessment, you think they deserve your vote come January 19, and whether they should have a chance to go forward. My philosophy is simple. For those BLP ministers who have proven themselves worthy, they deserve your vote. For those who have not proven themselves worthy, they deserve to be challenged. And if the result is an opposition in parliament, how is that any different to the system of government we've had for decades? Vote wisely, vote wisely, vote wisely. Thanks for joining me in another edition of Labor Matters. Don't forget to always adhere to good labor practices. I'm Michelle Russell. See you next time.